Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Full Tank Motorcycle Podcast. Today, I'm not with Tim, as per usual, but actually joined by none other than YouTube's Jish. Do you want to be called Jish or Josh?
Call me Jish. You can call me Josh if you like. I always end my emails with Josh, but at the same time, everyone calls me Jish.
You know, this is an episode where we've got somebody fresh on the channel, so we'll talk a little bit about what they do, the bikes they love. And so why not start with a bit about your channel and what sort of content it contains, just in case anyone wants to give it a watch?
Well, my channel, Jish, it's bike builds, basically. I kind of started from in my living room, just kind of having a go at building something. You know, like, you see all these bikes, people riding around to the pub or to coffee shops and stuff like that, and they're just not a factory bike. They just got a little bit something going on with them, and it's like, I wanted a piece of that, you know. And it just kind of literally me having a go of building something and learning these mechanical skills into making these creations and these bikes. Yeah, and it's just turned into a bit of like a hobby slash passion slash obsession of these custom bikes and different things you can do to them. Because the more you look, the more you realize you can do with these bikes. From like obviously paint schemes and like stylings aspects, wider wheels, suspension changes and so on. And it's, yeah, it just kind of fascinated me with how far you can go with some of these builds. And like, I think my first bike is a good example of that. Of how, like, it's a Franken bike. It was a CB125, Honda CB125. And there's not really much CB125 left in it now.
It's right down to the bare bones.
I'd say frame and headlight is the only thing that's CB left on it. Everything else is off a Yamaha, other versions of Hondas, just all custom made.
So that's basically what people can get from your channel, is a way to kind of follow along with the builds and kind of see the finished article and a little bit of riding and stuff once it's done.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, the whole aspect of like start to finish of what my ideas are, how I want to execute it, down to the problems along the way of making some of these ideas come to reality, because you know they don't always work out. Like, I've bought wheels that I thought, oh yeah, these will just fit up to the bike, and no, the sprocket's on the other side or something along the line, and you're like, well, how do I make this work? And then you kind of go down the lines of like, you've got to do X, Y, and Z to kind of get this to fit, and it's just figuring it out, problems and all. It's try and have a go and see what we can create.
Totally. Yeah, I think that's what's interesting about watching it, is just seeing some of those struggles, and it gives me a massive respect for, you know, yourself for doing it, because in the past when I've tried simple modification videos, there's just so many unknowns that crop up, and it really does add to the production time of each video and the stress levels as well, when you're trying to film and you're trying to do stuff and you've got like dirt on your hands, but you need to do something with the camera, and then you like need to go out and get a part or go and get a tool.
My cameras are always dirty. That's what I'll say. Yeah.
So yeah, it's really admirable you do it. And I guess, is that the sort of thing that your audience comes most for, or kind of what sort of thing is really popular with your?
Well, my channel has always been a bit of an experiment. It's less about the bikes, it's about what I like. I've not learned this in like college or university. It's all self-taught. Everything is self-taught, and it just kind of spiraled into what it is now, where I'm actually like, you know, doing this full time. Like, videography is like my living now. It's just trying to figure things out along the way.
Yeah, and one of the things that you seem to have massively figured out in terms of like videos that people want to watch would be the sort of like time lapses of the builds, which are phenomenal in terms of how many people watch them, right?
Yeah.
And this production level you've got as well. Yeah. And it's like all the best bits of your process. That's along the way with all the shots, and you know I think it looks
well. I do the part series where, like, you know, today we're doing the rear wheel conversion on it, and I kind of do a video on that, and it's like, you know, I think with CB125 there was like 45 parts to it, and it's like, that's a lot of videos. But I thought that I came up with the idea after all those part series is to like kind of wrap it up in one video. Like, I don't think, without saying I did it first, I didn't see many videos of people building bikes in like a time-lapse fashion of like being start to finish. There were some exceptions here and there, but I mean, like, it wasn't very common on YouTube, and it took a lot of effort because it was like 2 years worth of footage compiled, and I think I ended up going like over 2,500 clips compiled together into one video, and you know, it took about a month to edit, but it obviously paid off because people kept watching. I think it's like 3.5 million now views.
Right, for the 125.
The CB125, that was my first one, which started in my living room.
Right.
And it's kind of escalated into, you know, let's do somewhere, find somewhere actually to build it, and it ends up just being in a back office room where I used to work.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of has evolved as I've evolved with it.
Yeah. And there's definitely like a visible change over the years in terms of like what you'll see on the channel, both in terms of the bikes, obviously the skill set, in terms of builds and like filmmaking. And also then like the premises, like you say, that's changed from somewhere that you just found a little space. So I guess it'd be cool to know what are the bikes you've built over the years and maybe where you built them.
Yeah, because you don't just stop at one.
I've noticed this from following a few custom bike channels.
Yeah.
It's addiction.
You get the taste, especially when like you hear about places like Bike Shed where they are like, you know, they are all about custom bikes. When I was coming to the end of that building, realizing that this bike might be worth showing with all these other custom crazy bikes out there. And you apply and you kind of, then they said, oh yeah, you're accepted. You've been shortlisted into this thing. We need a bit more information. And then to be on stand with like 100 other custom bikes and like, you know, they're only limited to, I think it was 100 bikes that the first year I went, really speaks to me. Cause it's like, you know, a Bike Shed is a huge show.
Yeah.
So it was kind of, I don't know, it took me by surprise that they wanted to see my little bike there.
And that gives you like a boost to keep going back, keep building more.
So that's it. And I think you know, you get the taste for it, and then you're just like, okay, well, what can I do next? Because now I've got this free time after bike riding it and building it. And the next bike after that was a little bit of a bigger bike, and that was a Yamaha XJ650 1981. And it was just like more of a like, well, what can I do with this? It was a £350 really, really rusty bike.
And I was, where like, do you find that?
Just people message me saying like, I've seen your video, you know,
do you want this?
I was like, okay, yeah. So basically, I thought, let's have a go. They're only local to me, £350. What can go wrong? Because even my CB125, that was about a £300 bike. Came in a box of bits. It was like half the frame was bare. The engine came separately, and I was like, okay, well.
It sounds like a bargain, but have you ever bought a bike for like £300 and then regretted it? Like, do you find that it's even worse than you expect sometimes?
Not at all. I love it.
The worse, the better, because it gives you more to do.
Well, yeah, because it's always like, well, what do you need to do to, in order to get this working? And it's like, you know, you can buy a full bike and it works and it's nice and everything. But then I feel like, yes, you've got a nice foundation, but there's something like, it's like almost like a ritual when you kind of get a bike that doesn't run and you have to go through all the steps to get it running again, like, you know, fresh oil change, spark plugs, fresh fuel in it, just clean everything out, sort the carbs out. And then when it springs to life, it's just like a bit of a magic moment. Like, okay, this bike hasn't probably run for like 10 years.
Yeah.
And then once you kind of get it running and you can start, you know, getting it running properly, tuning it and stuff like that, and then you're able to ride it, even though you plan on stripping it down straight away afterwards, it's kind of just like a bit of like a ritual for me just to kind of get it working. But yeah, that was the same again with the XJ650. Got that running, full service, and a load of rust came from the exhaust. I don't know why. I think it was just because it was
being sat there. Blew out.
Yeah, it blew out. Literally, it just peppered my room like a pepper grinder, just everywhere. It was horrible. But again, it was interesting to see. Bit
good,
of a spectacle.
Good content.
Yeah, it was good content. Yeah, I keep forgetting that, good content. But yeah, you know, it's just, and then you get an idea. It's like, okay, well, where do you want to go with this? How do you want this bike to look? You know, what can you do with this platform? Even though it's got a bigger engine, you know, you've got more carbs to mess with, which is a bit more trickier, so on and so on. But yeah, like with that one, I went twin brick headlights, which was very controversial at the time. They came off a CRV 750, I believe. And yeah, they then I think it was X-axis built one, and it just looked incredible.
I must admit, I do remember those.
Yes.
It's like two Scrabble tiles. They're like literally huge. Big ones, but just literally dead square.
Yeah, exactly. And I was like, well, if I can make this look good, well, what else can I do? And like, again, it was very Marmite at the time, like showing people what I wanted to do. And people were like, no, that'll look rubbish. And it was like, even in the videos, people have said, you know, I saw you go down the route of putting these headlights on, and I didn't see the vision. But as they saw the finished bike, they were like, okay, yes, this makes sense. The kind of proportions of it, the way it looks, you know, just, again, I like to push the boundaries of what is acceptable almost.
Is there anything more polarizing as well than headlights? Like, they just seem to really trigger people, or they love it or hate it.
Definitely. Well, you know, because there's so many different types of headlights, even more of the modern bikes. I tend to hate modern headlights because they always just look like a runny egg to me, some of them.
Right.
They have a bit of a droop down, a bit of a weird oblong oval shape, but I just prefer a nice, obvious, like circle round headlight with like a regular bulb, or get just something different, like a square light. But yeah, it's
like the face of the bike, I suppose.
Yeah, it is.
So that's why people you know, either love or hate, probably.
Definitely.
But that was super interesting, that build, and definitely like a different direction.
Yeah.
And that's number two of how many now?
I've done three complete builds. I'm about to complete number four, which is a commission build, and that's a CB 250 Super Dream, that's following on from my GS250 scrambler that I did, which was again a Suzuki GS250, which I paid £80 for.
Now that, I think, might be my favourite bike you built. It just looks so good.
Yeah. That was a classic Porsche colour. It was Porsche Arga Blue. And again, that was like from a 60s colour. And it was just one of those non-metallic kind of just gloss, deep, dark colours. And I had the whole idea of like that colour. I chose that colour before I even chose the bike.
Right.
And I just knew I wanted to make a bike in that colour because I had not seen it on anything else before.
Yeah.
Colour is a big thing for me on these bikes. I think they kind of make or break how these bikes can look.
It's interesting that you say that as well, because I had my Street Twin tank painted.
That was gorgeous.
Yeah, it's a lovely bike. And the guy who painted that took almost all of his colour inspiration from cars. I guess because there's a big breadth.
There's a bigger catalogue of colours,
So I think that was a BMW colour, perhaps. Mm-hmm. It was like a bluey, silvery, grey, metallic-y kind of thing.
Yeah,
He was very passionate about the colours as well, which you're right. It's like, especially for older style bikes, where the tank was like a centerpiece of the bike in terms of the design and color, and actually the rest of it is less so. It's more functional, but that was the one bit that was like really visual, I suppose. So it's got to be a good color for you to,
of course,
to like it.
It is. It's like almost like a centerpiece, the foundation of what the bike is around. If you haven't got if it's not in a good color, then it's, what is it really?
You know, it's gonna be off-putting. Definitely.
And again, I think a lot of people get it wrong. Like, you know, they go with some of these like bright yellows and stuff like that, and I'm just like, it just doesn't suit it. It doesn't look right. But it's, you know, each to their own. Everyone has their kind of like ideas of what looks good, what doesn't look good. And, you know, at the end of the day, like, if you're going to be riding the bike, if you're building that bike for you, does it matter what you do with it? Because again, that's a lot of people slated me for building that CB125, saying I've ruined it because, you know, I've Frankenstein the bike, all the parts are put on it and stuff. But I'm like, well, I'm riding it.
Yeah.
Like 5 years down the line, I've still got the bike. I didn't build it for anyone else other than me.
Yeah.
So like, why should I care what I do with that bike?
If you built something that was broadly palatable enough that pretty much everyone liked it, well, it would almost be like a production bike because that's what they're designed for, mass appeal. And so in order to be a good custom, it sort of has to be a little bit polarizing and not to everyone's taste, because fundamentally you're making it more to yours, and that should make it less to the taste of others. I've always thought that about customs. Like when people are like, I don't like that build, it's like, that's probably a good thing that somebody doesn't.
Yeah,
otherwise, 100%. It's been played too safe, perhaps.
Yes, definitely. And that's the thing, people can play it too safe. And like, you know, again, I don't mind it. It's, everyone has their kind of like limits with where, their boundaries with what they want to do with the bike. If they just want to change the grips or just, you know, have a different like seat color, cool, man. Like, you know, it all looks good and it's like personal to you. But you've got to, you know, you're making it for you at the end of the day. If you're doing it for sale value of the bike, then you kind of lose that a little bit.
Totally.
And this is why I kind of, with the bikes I have, I don't really do it to sell the bikes. I've sold the Suzuki now just because I needed to make more room. And I didn't, like, it was that mindset of like, I don't want to keep every bike I'm building because I'm going to soon run out of space and I can't start anything new.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like the Suzuki's had to go, the Yamaha's had to go, but I've kept the CB125 simply because it was my first.
Yeah.
It's small, so it doesn't take up much room. And like, I've loved it. I've been happy with it, but I've always wanted to just like revisit it and kind of say, what can I do now with the skills I've learned over the years. So eventually I will kind of be redoing that, but yeah, like once I've done this CB250 commission build, which, you know, is going to be very different because it's not my style and taste, even though I've had like a good amount of like input into it, and I'm building it, I've still got to do it for the customer and get it right for them in terms of colors and stuff like that. There's leeways, we've had discussions about it, and you know, it's going to look really good. I'm happy with what's going to be created out of that bike, but I'm gonna kind of, moving on from that, I'm gonna stick to my own builds just because I can have free rein and kind of do what I
make
I
it
need
more
to,
to your taste.
Exactly. Yeah,
so tell me, like, premises wise it was in a back room of your previous employers to start, which was just like a storage,
it was a fire extinguisher service company, so it was just like literally an old a room that wasn't used in the back, and I just had, it was tiny. I just started in there. Well, I started in my living room. I probably did half the CB build in my living room, which I live in a flat. So I've got a set of stairs to deal with. So it was never going to be viable option. No, I've got no space outside, and I needed a premises to build these bikes. And at the time, this space was available for me. So I was like, yeah, let's just use this and see where we can go. That worked. How long was I there for? Probably like 2 years. And before I moved into the shipping container. That to me was like the best space ever for a building bike, though. And I wish I still had it. I really do.
How did you you know, come across that?
Well, plans were changing at work, so I did need to kind of think about moving out at some point. As things go. And then a friend of mine just had it, and he just said, "Oh, well, like, I've got this shipping container. It's bare. It's all insulated. It's got electricity, but do you want to use it for building bikes?" It was 30 foot long.
On his land, or?
Yeah, it's on his land. So he owned it. He just kept used it for storage.
Mm.
He even had a bike ramp ready in there waiting for me. So, you
that's
know,
a dream.
It was made for me.
Mm.
So once we cleaned it out, before we cleaned it out, I kind of made a plan of how I wanted everything to function in there. So we had like a 10-foot office at the back,
right,
and a 20-foot worth of bike building space. So we optimized all like shelving. So like any tables I had in there that could flip down, all storage on the wall. So nothing was like floor space. I needed as much floor space as possible because I had 3 or 4 bikes in there. Well, I had one on the ramp. So I was like working around everything. It just needed to be as efficient as possible, basically.
Right.
And I think it worked for me. Everything just worked. Yeah, I built basically the entire, well, not the entire, mostly the CB1. Well, this is the thing I find funny. I've never stayed in a space to do a complete build. I've always like moved halfway through a build.
Right.
So like when I started the CB125, I moved from home to this room. When I started the XJ650, I was in that room and moved to the container. When I did the GS250, that was the container into the new workspace. And
right,
now I'm in another space, which I'm yet to kind of like do this one full commission build. So I'm not planning on moving for that one though.
But that's so, like more of like a actual workshop area now.
Yes,
then.
Yeah, it is, yeah.
So that's kind of living the dream. I mean, you said the shipping container was the best, but
it was.
From what I can see on camera, I'm like, that looks pretty awesome, the space you've got now.
Yeah, it's really good. Like, it's very usable. I just liked the quirkiness of the shipping container, like opening the massive doors.
It
just felt safe as well. Like, I could lock it up. And it's one of those things that, like, I don't think anyone's ever going to get in because there was cameras all in the outside as well. And obviously, being a massive shipping container, they're built to, like, withstand, like, theft and stuff like that. So,
yeah, sure.
Yeah, it was good. Because I'd say before the shipping container, I did get broken into and have almost all tools stolen. They trashed the bike. Yeah, there was a lot. That was a bit of a heartbreak moment. And that kind of stalled it for a while, the channel. But these things come to test us.
You
recoup and move on.
And so that's kind of like a sub area of like another business, which is more like automotive.
Yeah.
So is there kind of a lot of knowledge sharing there with kind of techniques or tools?
Yeah.
Or?
So the guy I share the workshop with, Tom, Advocaat Motorsport, he's so knowledgeable. He does RX-7s. That he's a rotary specialist, like he knows those engines inside out. They're witchcraft to me because there's no pistons inside.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
these big Dorito shaped things that just spin, and I'm like, and he just he knows how to do them like that.
You're not going to collaborate on a rotary build then, like a Norton from the 80s or something?
But they're so expensive.
Are they?
To buy. Yeah, I've been looking at all rotary bikes, and we're looking at them, and I'm just like, if one just pops up at the right price, like there's
options
there. Yeah. So who That'll knows?
Be super interesting. Yeah,
yeah
I've
yeah.
never ridden anything like that. I think, is it the Crichton? Have you heard of that? It's like a bike that's been
familiar.
Built at the moment. 800 something, 800W.
Ooh.
But yeah, it's like a race bike
yeah.
That someone's building at the moment that I think is rotary. And it sounds incredible.
It's a proper track bike, isn't it, that one?
Yeah.
I know Suzuki did a rotary as well. Can't remember the model of it, but I know they've done one. But again, it's all these like classic bikes where like it's really cool technology, but if you could just put a modern twist on it, like give it some modern like kind of like fueling and stuff like that, these things would be absolutely wild.
Right.
They sound incredible as well because rotary is just a nuts sounding engine.
Mm, yeah, definitely. Yeah. It's got a certain je ne sais quoi to it.
yeah.
So, like, I was thinking about those bikes that you've built so far then. Mm. Like, what makes a good build versus a bad build? Because you said the worse it is, almost the better. So that's got to be one, not, I know that's not an absolute rule, but I do get the general idea that you need. You need something to do in order to make it kind of worthwhile building.
Yeah, like I think because it's more and more people are doing it now, and it's kind of getting not saturated because it's not at all. Like I wish there were more people building bikes out there.
Mm.
But everyone finds these parts online and just goes for like whatever they just find, like the cheap eBay seats and clip-ons and stuff like that. And I think that's a cafe racer. That's a bike build.
Yeah,
but like I think you need a little bit more to it. Like, learning fabrication was a big part for me.
And
I learned how to MIG weld first so I could do some kind of like frame fabrication just so I could like weld on hoops and stuff like that. Because again, a lot of people get scared by like chopping up the frame and attempting those sort of things, where it's not that difficult.
Right.
Just practice, kind of like keep everything clean, just, you know, take your time with it and you can do like some really good like work out of it. But then like learning how to do TIG fabrication, where I make a lot of my exhausts now, is just a very like, I don't know how to describe it. It's It's very zen making an exhaust because it's very quiet, very clean, sterile, cynical, and you just take your time. Mm. And you just, you know, take it nice and easy.
Step by step.
Step by step, and you can create some really cool things. Like I did the GS250, the exhaust, and that was really like kind of shaped and like flowed nicely with it, the bike.
So you think it's like about taking it that step further than just kind of bottom parts that gives the finished article like real character, I guess.
Yeah, don't get me wrong, like my CB125, there's loads of Bolton parts for that, and like I encourage people to use these Bolton parts because like not everyone's got the budget for some of these more expensive modifications like Motor Gadget, brilliant tools and stuff like that, but I mean everyone's got some form of budget. Yeah. And just use what you can get like hold of. I still use AliExpress parts today,
right?
Just because they're accessible and like they'll work for what I need them to be.
Mm.
Don't get me wrong, everything has its kind of like place, but yeah, I've done cheap builds, I've done expensive builds because my CB125 cost me £1,300 in total, including painting and stuff like that. Obviously no labor because I did all the work myself, whereas I spent nearly like $4,500 on the XJ650 just because it had all like the Moto Gadget, Motoscope Mini digital dash, all the buttons, the Kellerman lights, and you know, it all adds up. There's hundreds and hundreds of pounds just in the electrics alone, like even thousands.
Yeah.
But you don't need to have those either. You can do it cheaply. So this commission build I'm doing, it's all stock electrics. It's just more kind of like aftermarket parts, just like the indicators, you know, they're just ones you can buy on eBay just for like repeatability. If anything snaps off and breaks, you can just replace them nice and easy. Same with like bar end indicators, they're like £12.
Yeah.
And they just add a little bit something, as long as you can like wire them in properly and hide everything nicely as they're intended to be, you can really make them like a good amount of impact for like a little bit of money.
Got you.
So, yeah.
It's the time you put in and the effort, and that's where you can make up for not having like a huge budget. It's almost you know, we're both obviously fairly well versed in camera work and things like that.
Yeah.
And it's the same thing. If you don't have a lot of budget, you can still work wonders like a phone if you've got
100%
knowledge, research, time, you know, and that sort of thing. So it's super interesting. As for like plans moving forward, you've got quite a few bikes lined up, ready to go.
So
it's kind of like take your pick. So I don't know, I just thought it'd be interesting to run through some of those and some of the ideas you've got for them.
Of course. So like the current one, which I'm slowly modifying but I don't want to do too much to, is my Triumph Street Scrambler.
Yeah.
Just because like it is one of those bikes that's like you can just get on and ride it and it just works.
So it's more nice. Like a daily rider.
That is a daily rider, but I'm like doing tasteful customizations here and there. Like I did a trip to Wales and I needed a bit like more luggage space, so I put a took the rear seat off and put a pannier rack on and stuff like that. High mount mudguard, you know, just little tasteful things here and there. I've recently made the exhaust for it again, like talking about TIG welding.
Yeah.
Bought a cheap AliExpress header unit for it, which was like £100.
Mm.
And then I made all the pipes for it. So like overall, it was like maybe 150, maybe £200 max in parts to make this complete exhaust unit, built in DCATs, DB killers, everything. And you know, it's a full unit and it just looks nice. But yeah, other bike projects I've got going on, I've bought an XS 650 and that's going to be a hard tail, kind of really unrideable thing. So I'm not looking for comfort on that one, but I'll be using a lot of like expensive parts on that one, but that's going to be a bit more of like a show bike just because of the style of it. I've always wanted to work with an XS 650 because the engines are so iconic looking and they're very simple in terms of the way they work. These modern bikes, they're so difficult to kind of work on because of how much kind of like regulation and moderation needs to go into them.
Yeah.
Like ECUs and stuff like that. I wouldn't want to go stripping the Triumph back because of it's basically a car with ABS and all like the different features and stuff like that. And it's all packed into such a tight frame. But the older bikes just tend to be a bit more bare bones, basic, and you can like work that to your advantage almost. Mm. I'm looking forward to it on those because it's going to have like a little hovering seat and like I'm even going maybe plated wheels, so like solid spoke wheels. But yeah, I haven't really decided on how that one's going to look yet.
Right, but definitely going for the more kind of out there.
Yeah, it's going to be resto mods, like definitely. I'm not going big gorilla hangers or anything like that. I hate those. I'm probably going to go low down clip-ons and just kind of keep it really low profile. There's a company called Limitless Customs that do a lot of like Harley Davidson stuff,
right?
And their bikes just always look so clean. They're always like murdered out black, you know, just really simple, smaller lights, low down. And I think I want to kind of go for that sort of vibe but with an old school bike.
Yeah,
because at the end of the day, like the XS 650 was more of like, I think it was more a viable option than people buying the Harley Davidson like shovel heads and stuff like that, because they're still big money today.
Are they?
Yeah, silly money. So yeah, it's just going to be that sort of like era of bike, because it's an 80s bike, so I want to keep it 80s vibes, but with some modern technology in the mix.
Other bikes. Scooter?
Oh, the scooter, yeah. I haven't really talked too much about the scooter yet on my channel or anything, because that's going to be like its own entity. But if you're watching this soon, Grand Theft Auto is very popular right now, and there's the new one that's just come out. And if you're a fan of Grand Theft Auto, you might know what the Faggio is. So it's a very stylized little scooter bike that's in the game, and I've managed to find a bike that looks very similar to it, but I'm going to kind of paint it in the style. I'm going to make the whole video series revolving around the Grand Theft Auto style and stuff like that. Colorways is going to be a bit unusual, but being bright pink. But I'm not going to say much more on that, because I want it to kind of be a surprise.
A little teaser.
Out. Yeah, a little teaser. But that's just tucked away until the time is right.
For got
that
you.
One. Yeah, that'll be probably like a next summer job.
And so that's the Street Scrambler, the XS650, the scooter.
And I've got a unbranded bike coming in, so that's going to be an interesting one, because there's like no parts I can get for it.
Yeah.
I'm going to customize it again as well. Like, it's a modern bike, but I want to kind of give it that old school feel again, but I'm waiting for that to come in. Yeah, that hasn't arrived in my workshop just yet.
Interesting. So it sounds like you're fully lined up, not really needing anything to work on. More so just the time to
that's
get around to it.
Time, space. The space is running out, but... I'm working through them slowly, and I'm hoping to get this commission build finished, and then next year I can just like spend all as much time as I can with the rest of the build. So, you know, it's the Triumph, I'll be doing bits and bobs here and there, like I'm doing a tail tidy kit for that.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a thing that, like, if it works, I might even put it into production.
Right.
As in like a proper production part, because like the parts I've made for it, they're not that expensive. Even like it's going to have like an integrated brake light into the actual mud guard. Because at the moment it just sits on top. It's a bit clunky, you know, they always are, because they, you know, come from factory like that. But I want it just to be a bit more streamlined. Yeah, I'm going to be 3D scanning it all, so it will be literally like hopefully a bolt-on part that you can be just taken. Not any like heavy modification. But again, it's down to what people want. If they want to see that, then brilliant. But if not, I'm going to make it for mine and just have it as my own custom piece anyway. So
nice.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say, if you type for space, just to rewind a few seconds, you know, if you ever want somewhere to house a custom motorcycle for a little while, hand over the keys. We'll gladly take it.
Of course.
Thinking then, just like beyond that, are there any bikes that are just dream builds that you want to kind of build up to? Because obviously it seems like a sort of steady progression, much like building anything yourself.
When
any
budget
business.
Allows, you know, if you've got the budget there, you will kind of like cater towards like, well, I can afford this now, so what can I do
and you
with
can
that? Yeah.
Get a better space to work in, of better course. Tools, better cameras, and then you're like, I'll get this bike and a slightly bigger bike, or I'll spend a little more on the parts.
That's it, yeah.
And so like, where does it end in terms of like, what would be the sort of peak? I know it's difficult, but
and you
love them all equally. Like
I do,
children.
I do. As you I say, know? Like, as I explain, like, you know, there's something sacred about like just getting that like little 350 quid parts, like rubbish pile of tip of bike that you're going to get and turn it in and actually get it working and running. There's something special about that, which I'll always kind of go back to. But, you know, like I do like some of the newer bikes. I love Triumph Bonneville Bobber. Mm. I think they're incredible bikes. And, you know, there are awesome builds out there. Thornton 100, like his builds are incredible. So like he's already kind of doing my kind of dream version of that anyway.
They're very cool
looking bikes. I probably wouldn't go as extreme as him with like the wide wheel kits and stuff like that, because, you know, I think
that's his signature thing. You'd probably get accused of plagiarism.
Yeah, exactly. Somewhat. And I'm not here for that. Like I'm here just to like build what I want to build, and it's
an awesome platform. They're not super comfy, those bikes.
No.
But they do look like incredible.
Definitely. And I'm falling in love with my Street Scrambler more and more, just with like riding it, just because I've done trips to Wales on it, and it's so comfortable. It just works. And like, it's just, you just get a feel, you understand why people love like Triumphs as a whole.
Yeah.
I think the Bonneville platform is just a really good, solid platform, and you can't really go wrong with it.
It's such a nice engine as well. Yeah. Really torquey. Smooth in a way, and like perfect throttle delivery, and I really kind of wish I'd kept mine. Yeah. You know, it's not a bike that I necessarily needed or would use, but it would just be such a nice thing to have in the garage.
I don't look for speed when I'm riding. I'm one of these riders that goes for, like, you know, round town, like, or even like in some country riding and stuff like that, just like going through the bends, just put some music in one ear and just like, you know, just lose yourself on the roads.
Yeah, totally. And that's the peak, is it really?
Yeah.
Bonneville Bobber.
I love Ducatis.
What sort of, like the older end or the kind of like...
The modern stuff's good. I'm more of like the older style ones, but again, they're just, the price of them now is ridiculous.
So the photo shoot you did recently with, what would you say the name of the company was?
ASE Motorcycles, yes.
Is that Customer Ace Service. Or... Or is it ASE?
I'm guessing it's... I think it's his name. I think it's basically
okay,
his
got
name.
Okay,
yeah, it just it basically is Ace. But yeah, he did a retro mods Ducati. I don't remember which model it was, but again, it was completely...
I think it's a 900SS, which is like... Yeah. The sports bike that was just prior to like the 916, which was like a real change in direction, started to look like really a bit more modern. But that is more...
Yeah, gorgeous bike.
Beautiful, but it's kind of slab fronted, isn't it?
And I like that.
Trellis
though.
Frame. Yeah, it looks amazing. And that is like a track bike, I believe, that build. That so it doesn't have lights. And
yeah, exactly. It was a track-inspired bike. And it was basically just wanted to make a retro-looking bike with modern tech. So it had all like the... Motoscope, I don't know which model it was, but like the really nice sweeping like half moon digital dash, minimal wiring, or upgraded brakes, forks, everything, and it just looked amazing. It just worked as well, but sadly that was just an office piece. It was never going to be a track bike.
Did it start?
Don't know. I think it could start. I think it will start. I've never saw it running, but at the same time, like, I just knew it was going to be in some guy's office on like at the top floor of a penthouse suite sort of thing, like, you know. But for each to their own, eh? Like, if you want it to have it as an art form, it's one of them.
I've got to say that bike does look good enough to be considered a piece of art.
Exactly.
It's a shame.
Yeah.
But yeah, I do get it as well. Yeah. And it also probably is too much blood, sweat and tears and money and time has probably gone into it to risk.
He spent, it was almost like a unlimited check build, that one. But, which would be nice if I could do something like that. I do want to mention... just like how we started speaking though, and like, you know, where your channel was at the time and what you were doing, because you were living in London, you were doing your motor vlogs.
Yeah, well,
and I don't know how I found it, but you mentioned me in one of your videos.
Yeah, I think that was back when I was more kind of just riding around town
I think you were doing your commute to work, weren't you?
Yeah, and it was sort of interesting because that was before I started learning bikes and stuff so much. And so it was really like, well, what can I do with my time when I'm commuting to kind of talk about other channels or that sort of thing? So that was one idea I had for a piece. And like, there were certain channels I really enjoyed watching, include yours. And it, at the time, I was doing very simple mods on my own bike. So it was kind of inspirational and aspirational to kind of watch someone else take it a bit further, you know?
Of course.
Weirdly, like, you know, our channels couldn't have then become much more different, you know?
Oh,
like,
God, yeah, things I know.
Gone in very different directions, and definitely I sort of broadened it out and did more of what I knew in terms of like broad appeal media. But I remember that was the first time, and just kind of interacting and stuff.
Yeah,
and
then, I think that was my first like interaction with somebody else on the platform doing something that was mentioned, talking about what I was doing, and it was very jarring at the time. I was like, oh, somebody's talking about me, like,
yeah,
you
someone's
know?
Actually watching
yeah,
it.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Almost like when the comments start rolling in, and you're like, oh, it's hard to understand the internal motivators that make you do something like that, but also get surprised when like people do actually watch it and start to interact with it.
Yeah,
surely
definitely.
That's what you want, but it is almost like a surprise and kind of unnerving, but
it was a nice
good
surprise,
at the same
though.
Time. Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. And then we've sort of crossed paths a few times over the years.
Of course,
like, I still love going to custom bike shows. I find them, well, EICMA Motorcycle Live.
Yeah, man.
I love them now because we get to meet so much of the audience. And as the channel's got bigger, that's become more of a component of like running the channel, is like chatting to people when we're out and about.
Yeah.
Also from a work perspective and in terms of having things to make videos about, they're brilliant too.
Of course.
But I think if I was going to a show purely for my own pleasure, didn't take my camera, just went to kind of admire bikes, there's so much craftsmanship and thought and design and kind of originality and personality in all the custom builds that I think that's probably how I'd spend my time. So, you know, it's still something I love a lot and why I still enjoy like catching up on the channel when I get a chance to, because it's...
Of course.
It's the craftsmanship side of motorcycling, pretty much. And you just don't see that much with
that. To me, it's more, it's the community side of things. As you say, like, we've gone kind of like two different, very different avenues, but we're still like, we talk all the time and, you know, we do bits and bobs. And I think like, it's nice just to have that community aspect as a whole. Like, and as you say, when people come up to you and stuff like that, just want to speak to you. And same again, when people come to me at the shows and say, look, oh, I love your build. And, you know, wearing a t-shirt that I've, because I used to do merch and stuff. It's so cool. And you just want to give back to the community because that kind of motivates you to do more, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's nice. Yeah.
Definitely. It does give you a boost. And you're so used to looking at numbers in terms of analytics, which we talked a bit about today,
of course,
we do extensively here. Mm-hmm. But then you also have to remember that each single number in terms of a view. It's like an actual person who feels something about the content, either good or bad. And that's probably the best thing about meeting people, is just getting that reminder that some people...
It's real.
I mean, some people do hate it. You know, we do get those comments where people don't like the content, but a lot of people do. And like, that is super motivating, isn't it? To be like, oh yeah, it keeps you kind of wanting to do it.
You're always going to get keyboard warriors, sadly. And it doesn't matter what you're doing, who it's aimed at.
Is it you?
Obviously, yeah.
Take him
down. No, because I get them too, and they make me cry. So.
Anyway, well, thanks so much for your time. Really good to like chat. Hopefully,
I've enjoyed being here. Thank you for having me today.
Oh, our pleasure. And hopefully, some people listening will go and check out the channel, Jish. Nice. As I said, they just search for that. There's also Jish Second Gear, a little bit more informal reactions,
more car stuff that I'm going to be posting on there, just because like it's a different avenue altogether. Like, and I love automotive, full stops. And I've got a nice car I want to just show off and do cool things with and take on track days and so on. And it's like, it doesn't really fit the main channel, but that's what it's there for, Jish Second Gear.
And a little bit of your photography work as well on Instagram, which is a good way to keep up with like what you're up to next. Yeah. So definitely do check it out. Many thanks, everybody, for listening today. We'll be back very shortly. I've got Tim also visiting the studio. So if you are watching on the YouTube channel rather than audio only, we're going to be in the studio together as opposed to remote. So do look forward to that episode and check it out. Many thanks for listening. See you next time.
Peace.